Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleOmics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting live and on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, March the 20th, 2022. And today on the program, I am joined, as always, back in our usual recording situation, not in person, but remote. I apologize for the less than spectacular transmission quality of last week. This week, back to normal. The stock board scrolling behind us. Our faces well lit. I am joined, as always, by our co-host, Chris Gull, who's maybe...
I have a new chair. A new chair over here. Yes. As well as a new desk, so we're... advancing it over here. And of course, the new mic made its debut last week. So
yes, you are encouraged by WrestleOmics management to finally build your office chair. And you took the, well, you don't know if you took the initiative, but you were motivated. You were properly motivated. And the office chair is here. It looks good. It's not one of those massive gaming chairs. It matches your shirt even, I would say.
Oh, a little bit. Yeah. Black and red. So. Mm-hmm. I got red and blue going on, but...
Oh, is that blue? Okay.
Yes.
I've got blue and blue. This is not the slide that we want to deal with first off. We will get to that later. But what are we going to talk about today on the program?
So on today's show, jam-packed for you, we're going to break down the dismissal request from WWE for the lawsuit that MLW filed against them. We're going to talk demographics in wrestling ratings when it comes breaking down to race and ethnicities. We're going to discuss an NFT cartoon series, which is, you know, which is very interesting. We're also going to discuss the new WWE Performance Center class and more wrestling experience than you think. All that and much more here on this edition of WrestleOmics Radio.
Mm-hmm. So Canel Gates wrote a really inspirational meme this week. I think that's where we're going to start, correct?
That is where we are going to start. And here is the inspirational meme. MLW is complaining about the shadows cast by the boughs of a lone tree while it stands in an otherwise open and extending field.
It's very poetic, very metaphorical, inspirational even, I would say.
Yeah, and, so, and as I told you off air, it's kind of fair in my opinion.
How so?
In the aspect of, well, and WWE is not the only wrestling competitor, and it's an expanding market. You've seen multiple promotions on television right now. We have, of course, WWE has three programs on television. AEW has two programs on television. Impact has a program on television. New Japan Pro Wrestling has a program on television. Ring of Honor did have a program on television. We don't know what the future lies for that. So there is wrestling on television, mm-hmm. and many of capabilities. And I mean, I'm not saying that what MLW is saying that WWE did was true or untrue, but to make the statement of the, hey, we're not blocking you from expanding your business because it's an expanding, you know, form of business.
So throw the case out, the Honorable Chris Gullo says.
I'm not saying throw the case out. What I'm saying is that it was, I told you, kind of fair. So because I could, because you know what MLW's alleging could be true, could be false, but the point to make that because even if WWE blocked them from one network, that's not going to like stop them from other opportunities.
If they blocked them with the intent to block them, they probably did something illegal. I don't know. We're not legal experts. We're going to go through this in the best summary that I can. I did run the new response from WWE past a couple of lawyers, and I'll interject to the extent to which I've been informed as we go here. They do have a hearing date scheduled for September 29th, 2022, in courtroom 4 or via video conference. So who knows if that will happen on that date. I think these things tend to get pushed back. To be clear, this is the first new lawsuit that I've kind of covered here right from the beginning. We've talked about lawsuits for a long, long time on WrestleNomics Radio, but we haven't really had a new fresh one for me to start to get more of a handle on how these things work until this one. So I've got
I think MLW is very public about it too. Which you don't really kind of see that some of these lawsuits are like, they try to keep private as possible. Like we didn't know much about a lot of the WCW, WWE, WWF lawsuits back in the '90s until after they happened, after the fact. So MLW is very public. They're letting you know that they're suing WWE.
Yes. They put out a press release. When this lawsuit came out in January, just get people up to speed. This lawsuit came out in January. This is MLW suing WWE because they allege that WWE interfered with a Tubi deal, streaming service Tubi, which is owned by Fox. They allege that Stephanie McMahon swooped in at the 11th hour the night before, the day before it was to be announced by MLW and Tubi that they were going to have the MLW content on Tubi. Allegedly, Stephanie McMahon did something to pressure Tubi to terminate the deal, which they did. They did terminate it, at least. MLW alleges W interfered with MLW's relationship with Vice. MLW alleges that MLW alleges that W interfered with its relationship with Fight as well. So there's a lot of stuff. So now this past week, WWE responded, as expected, with a motion to dismiss the case, arguing that what do they always say? Without merit. Arguing that, among other things, MLW's arguments are irrational. We'll get to it. I've got a lot of blue slides here for you to read today, Gullo.
Yes, I'm ready for it.
I might just stop you at any moment and interrupt you and start saying stuff. So
I got coffee. I got water. We're good to go. One other thing, too, about the lawsuit is they alleged some type of contract tampering, too, that WWE was talking to MLW, at least one MLW superstar, while they were still under contract.
That is mentioned in WWE's response. I didn't pull any of those excerpts out. This is like a 35-page motion to dismiss memorandum. So, I don't want to bore people with reading an entire document, but you can. The link to it is in the article that I put up on Patreon if you do want to read the complaint yourself. And if we get that up on Court Listener, I would share that link out too, probably on Twitter. I was having some issues with my recap extension. Now no one knows what I'm talking about. But anyway, go ahead.
We'll get right into it. Here are the highlights. MLW has given up competing in the ring and has chosen instead to compete in the courtroom. MLW has brought claims for monopolization, intentional interface with contractual relations, intentional interface with prospective economic advantage, and unfair competition against WWE.
Interference.
In a vain hope to shift blame for its failures away from itself. But MLW's failings are its own. Its claims are meritless and should be dismissed as a matter of law. Interference, sorry. I wanted to say interface for some reason. That seems very WWE to me, but yeah, interference.
Yes. Distraction finishes and so forth. So that's sort of their opening statement. Yes, a lot of colorful lines in this motion to dismiss. Notable that WWE did not move to change venue, as we speculated they might. I talked to I showed this to one lawyer who just sort of pondered it. I don't know if there's some strategic reason why they're not moving to change location, but they are talking about how there's a state law, California state law, that's somehow associated with this complaint. Sorry, I don't know all the super fine details here, but WWE does, and when I say WWE, I mean the K&L Gates lawyers, including Jared McDivitt, who are representing WWE. WWE does write in here how it's preserving something about venue because, hey, look, it points out WWE points out that there were no one was harmed in California. These companies are both incorporated in Delaware. MLW is headquartered in New York. WWE is headquartered in Connecticut. So it sounds like that's not off the table, moving to change venue. MLW would want to keep this in California because the legal system probably favors their situation more so if this is kept in California. And WWE would have an easier time, most likely, if they were able to move this to a different state, such as Connecticut, which seems like the most likely destination to me for this. So anyway, WWE has a number of points about why this case should be dismissed. Go ahead and you can read those now, Gal.
First, MLW fails to plausibly allege that WWE violated Section 2 of the Sherman Act. MLW provides no facts to support its naked assertion that there is a relevant product market for the sale of broadcasting rights for professional wrestling programs to national networks, cable, and streaming services. Even if such a market somehow existed, MLW fails to plausibly allege that WWE possesses monopoly power within it. To the contrary, the complaint is bereft of any facts suggesting that WWE WWE could possibly hold any power over the dozens, if not hundreds, of networks, cable, and streaming services in which WWE has no commercial relationships. Indeed, AEW and Impact's successful sales of broadcast rights just show the opposite. Finally, MLW's Sherman Act claims fail for lack of antitrust injury. The antitrust laws protect competition, not competitors. Yet MLW fails to allege any plausible facts demonstrating harm to the competitive process. The failure to plead antitrust injury is an absolute fatal to MLW's complaint and indeed independently warrants dismissal.
Yes. So in plain English, any idea what they're saying there?
So they're basically saying kind of what I brought up at the beginning of the show, that this is an open market. WWE, there's hundreds of networks out there. WWE doesn't really ship every network. They're not stopping them from getting a TV deal. Look, AEW and Impact have TV deals. Mm-hmm.
AEW and Impact, whew, successful companies. Look out, WWE, or at least in this document. Whoa, they're doing well. Why can't you do well? MLW says the Kane L. Gates lawyers. They're also saying here that the market that MLW needs to argue exists doesn't exist. What WWE is getting at here is that there's not a wrestling broadcast rights market that supposedly WWE has monopoly control of. No, there's just a broad TV rights market. There seems to be some semantic criticism over the terminology that MLW used to refer to the market that they're trying to refer to. But as we'll get to, WWE lays out this case of, hey, look, there's all these different types of content out there. But part of this is the Sherman Act. So MLW is alleging that WWE violated Act 2 of the Sherman Act, which requires the possession of monopoly power in the relevant market. So what does that mean? Monopoly power and market power, as it was clarified to me through this motion to dismiss, monopoly power and market power are interchangeable terms. So monopoly power would be, you know, in our view, easier to argue WWE had in 2018 or prior, before AEW rose from non-existence. So they would have to dominate, I think it's something like 30% of the market. Anyway, condition two, the willful acquisition or maintenance of that power as distinguished from growth or development as a consequence of superior conduct, business acumen, or historic accident. So what I understand that to mean is that WWE must not just have monopoly power, not just have it, but it actually has to do something aggressive and therefore illegal to maintain its power, that controls prices or discourages growth, not just being, a great product. So
real quick before I read the next part, this is a real quick sidebar, but this argument could have been made probably more in 2001 than 2022, wouldn't you think?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, buying out WCW and basically buying the rights out of...
Mm-hmm. Yes. I've lost your audio. Oh, dear.
To plausibly allege...
You're back. You're fine.
Okay, all right. Second, MLW fails to plausibly allege intentional interference with contractual relations. MLW asserts that it had a contract to sell Tubi, a streaming service owned by Fox, broadcast rights for its wrestling program, and that WWE forced Tubi to terminate that contract under the threat of pulling all WWE content from Fox. But MLW alleges no facts explaining how WWE's communication or communications over the course of one day achieved this response from Fox. Moreover, the notion that the WWE would jeopardize hundreds of millions of dollars in rights fees and breach its own contract with Fox in order to keep MLW off a streaming service makes no rational sense. Just as Fox capitulation to any such threat is wholly implausible in light of its ability to enforce its contract with WWE.
Yes,
I should have did some practice with these words before we did this today.
We're learning new vocabulary here, and one word which I don't think is in any of these excerpts that I pulled out here, but it applies to what you just read, is that WWE alleges that, or argues, I guess, that MLW's arguments are conclusory, meaning that they're just sort of allegations that don't have any evidence to back them up or reason why they should be accepted as true, according to WWE. And that's, I mean, the MLW complaint is a lot of allegations. It's basically no records of what they allege to have taken place. There's no records that they present at this point to support that what they allege to have taken place actually took place. We'll see what they deliver in the future. But here, you know, WWE is arguing that it would be irrational for WWE to go to Fox and say, hey, if you don't stop working with this competitor, MLW, we're going to pull all of our content. We're going to pull SmackDown off of Fox, which is in the realm of what MLW is alleging. WWE argues that, hey, look, these companies, these are bigger companies, and look, MLW itself points out that WWE makes, I think they say something like 90% of their revenue. You know, WWE sort of puts this in quotes and doesn't necessarily accept this as a fact, but MLW's own complaint undermines this notion that WWE would have the power, the leverage, to pressure a media distributor like Fox to do something, because it's Fox that pays WWE and contributes a large amount of WWE's revenue to WWE. So the power really lies with the media distributors, according to WWE. I would say, though, that I don't buy the idea that WWE has no leverage and no influence over its business partners, including Fox or NBC Universal. I think, you know, these are, as much as it's sort of a business buzzword to call everybody a business partner, I think it is a mutually it definitely is a mutually beneficial relationship, obviously, right? But I would agree that the media distributors do have the more of the power. They don't need WWE as much as WWE needs them. But it's not like there aren't other TV homes for WWE content to live. So there is some incumbence on a partner like Fox to keep WWE happy. Although there's a huge incumbent on WWE to keep Fox happy. And same for NBC Universal or any of the other major business partners, such as the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. But WWE saying, hey, look, no, there's this whole TV ecosystem out here that consists of all these shows that appear in the showbiz daily, top performers, including 90 Day Fiance, Survivor, NASCAR. Anyway, I think you're about to mention them.
Yep. So the next point here, MLW alleges that the relevant product market is the national market for sale of broadcasting rights for professional wrestling programs to networks, cable, and streaming services. However, MLW provides scant facts supporting that this proposed market. MLW includes no allegations about the structure of the television and streaming industries, no allegations about how or why networks, cable, or streaming service purchase broadcast rights, no allegations about the factor that networks, cable, or streaming services consider when purchasing those rights, no allegations about various potential fee structures used in the industry, no allegations even about the production of professional wrestling programming, and no allegations that foreign regional or local channels or streaming services could not purchase professional wrestling broadcast rights. Importantly, MLW fails to allege that customers here alleged to be national networks, cable, and streaming services do not have reasonably interchangeable alternatives to broadcasting rights for scripted professional wrestling programming. Obviously, the vast majority of content aired by national networks, cable, and streaming services is not professional wrestling.
Yes. It's any number of things, including.
So the next point here is MLW cannot explain why other content such as The Walking Dead, Survivor, 90 Day Fiance, UFC, or NASCAR is not a reasonable interchangeable substitute for scripted professional wrestling. To say that no reasonably interchangeable alternatives to professional wrestling broadcast rights exist is akin to saying no reasonably interchangeable alternatives to broadcasting rights for zombie shows exist. It is, of course, absurd, and purchases of broadcasting rights for zombie shows would consider other programming as alternatives.
This would be like, is there any other like zombie property out there? Dawn of the Dead?
There was one on Sci-Fi that was highly touted. I think it may have just ended. I remember the DJ Qualls being in it. I know that was for quite a few years. I forget what it was called, but there was that. There was iZombie on CW. There's been, and zombie programming is very popular on streaming services. Netflix just had a import from Korea. I think it's like We Are All Dead or We're All Going to Be Dead or something like that. That's becoming very popular.
So this would be like if some offshoot of The Walking Dead came to the court and said, it's The Walking Dead keeping us out of these markets, according to WWE. We'll see. And then point number three.
Third, MLW fails to plausibly allege intentional interference with prospective economic advantage. MLW asserts that it had a contract with Vice to air archival content and was negotiating to sell broadcast rights for first-run content. MLW postulates that WWE, through a single phone call in June 2021, forced Vice to abandon those negotiations for first-run content months later. But MLW fails to plead that WWE even knew that MLW was negotiating to sell Vice broadcast rights for its first-run content. Moreover, MLW admits that Vice aired one episode of first-run MLW content months after the alleged WWE phone call, demonstrating that the conversation had zero influence on Vice. Finally, MLW fails to plead that WWE was the proximate cause for Vice's decision to abandon negotiations rather than some other intervening fact, such as the first-run episode of MLW drawing a disappointing number of viewers.
Yes. So this is referring to MLW's allegation that W Studios president at that time, Susan Levinson, called a Vice executive, according to the MLW complaint, and told that Vice executive, I forget exactly what's alleged, that you have to kill the deal or whatever, but Vince McMahon was quote unquote pissed about it. So I don't know. I've been struggling to imagine what kind of evidence MLW will bring here. Are they going to bring this, a Vice executive to say something on the record about this? I don't know. But this is WWE saying, look, the Vice show, if this happened in June, you still had a show in October that was on the air, that one new piece of content, Fightland. And WWE bringing up that the viewership was disappointing. Have you looked at this complaint, Gullo?
I have not.
Have you seen what is an exhibit to this complaint, or have you heard what is an exhibit to this complaint?
I'm assuming they pull up a ratings report of the 40,000 that was on the MLW Fightland.
Wrestling Observer Newsletter is an exhibit to this complaint, which basically means it's an attachment at the era, not this complaint. The exhibit to this motion to dismiss. It's the Observer citing the viewership for Fightland, and citing what happened in that same week, which was the head-to-head battle between Rampage and SmackDown for 30 minutes. Yes. So there's that. What have I got?
Going here?
Elsewhere in this, we get WWE talking about how there's ample competition in this wrestling world. There's AEW, which has had success. WWE mentions that in the demo, 18 to 49, Dynamite and Raw are pretty close, according to MLW's own numbers. And they kind of undermine and question the credibility of the, MLW doesn't say where they get the numbers from. I have a feeling I know where MLW got the numbers from, though, probably from my spreadsheet. And ultimately from Nielsen. And no doubt WWE has plenty of access to Nielsen data to check that. But WWE is saying that, hey, look, there's all these other partners too that they could get deals with. We haven't interfered with any foreign or regional partners, and you can make deals with Disney and Paramount, the former Viacom. Viacom's been rebranded to just Paramount now. Warner Media, Discovery, AMC, Netflix, Amazon, Apple, they mention others. And WWE has no major partnership with any of those companies to the extent that they do NBC Universal and Fox. And this is in the context in which we get the great bow, tree, and an open field comment. The Ring of Honor purchase is also mentioned to say, hey, look, it's not like other companies are even struggling to have output. AEW just introduced a second program. AEW just, I guess it's not quite accurate, right? This says AEW also recently purchased another promotion, Ring of Honor, from Sinclair Broadcast Group to operate a secondary business. It seems Tony Khan has purchased another promotion. Not AEW, but clearly those two things are going to be very aligned. So that's the extent of WWE's motion to dismiss that we're going to cite directly here. But PW Insider, Pro Wrestling Insider. Got a comment from Court Bauer, who is the MLW CEO.
Real quick before they comment, we didn't say the word for word what the fourth point was. It was MLW fails to allegedly engage in unfair competition. Unfair competition claims that it must be tethered to some antitrust violation or tort, and MLW has alleged none. But yeah, we'll go to Court Bauer's comments here. Of course, WWE is scrambling to dismiss. They don't want this thing to go to court. I look forward to that opportunity.
So there's that. And now, according to these court documents, MLW will have until April 22nd, so about a month from now, I would expect some sort of opposition to WWE's motion to dismiss, basically a response to this memorandum. I've got to think there's going to have to be some sort of evidence that MLW's going to have to bring in these in their next statement on this. MLW, of course, is being represented by Mark E. Kasowitz, who has represented Trump and Bill O'Reilly. And then it was disclosed through these documents that WWE will have until May 16th. So about 2 months from now, they'll have within that time frame to file a reply in support of their motion to dismiss, to further support their claims. So there's those things. Sorry, we're having some issues with the quality of the stream here. I've set low latency, and I'm afraid my internet is just not able to handle it. Hopefully our audio is coming through okay.
All right, so we will move on to the next. So we're actually going to discuss ratings with demographics, as far as Black viewers, Hispanic viewers, other race, and white viewers.
Yes, so we talked about this. After the Big Swole comments and Tony Khan's comments about Big Swole on New Year's Eve, we talked about that a couple days later. But this was, we were referencing information that was from Q3 of 2021, July 1st to September 12th, showing that WWE has a larger, by percentage, black audience than AEW has for either of its programs. At that time, Rampage had only had, I believe, five episodes through this timeline, right? Because Rampage started in the middle of August. Since this time, AEW has moved from TNT to TBS, And so I got an update of this information, and it looks quite similar. I'm just, for people watching on YouTube, I'm just skipping back and forth between the two charts here, and it's not a dramatic difference. So to be transparent, I got percentages, the share of the audience by race demographic, for Black viewers, Hispanic viewers, other races viewers, and white viewers. And I got these to pretty precise percentages. So what I did was I just calculated the P2 plus that we all know. We all know it, but it that I know when I have a spreadsheet, because we track ratings every day. I just took the viewership, the average viewership for these timelines, and I just sort of reverse engineered what the viewership was and to check how the viewership has actually changed by percentage. And what we get are these viewership numbers that we see on the screen here. So the main takeaway is, I believe, this. So now I have percentage deltas of the difference between what is most of Q3 2021 and what I got the update. I forgot to tell you what timeline we're looking at here. Q1 2022. So the quarter that we are currently in, this is January 1st through March 13th. And so what we have for the percentage difference in these audiences between those two time periods, I wish I had Q4 as well, but between Q3 of last year, Q1, most of Q1 of this year, which we're still in, we have a difference. My main takeaway here is that the difference for Dynamite, for Black viewers, is down 22%, while the total audience, sort of the baseline difference, it's down 7%. It's not surprising. I mean, we've all been watching the ratings, or at least I've been watching the ratings every week. And viewership from Q3, that period that included the debut of CM Punk, the debut of Bryan Danielson, that was a really high period for AEW. They did some of the biggest Dynamite numbers ever in September. And now in Q1 so far, viewership is down sequentially from that time period, down by 7% overall. And again, this is a period where they're on TBS. More on that in a second. But Black viewership is down 22%. Hispanic viewership for Dynamite is up 4%. And viewership among other races is down 14%. And white viewership is down 5%. So white viewership has held up better than the overall difference in the audience. Now, Rampage, which now we're looking at 10 episodes for each program here. And for those listening in audio, we're looking at all five of the major five wrestling shows: Dynamite, Rampage, Impact, NXT, Raw, and SmackDown. And Rampage, now we're looking at 10 episodes of, rather than five episodes in the previous period. Rampage is down by 32% overall. This includes this, you know, that Q3 period includes the big CM Punk episode and a lot of those early episodes that did especially well relative to where it has settled around 500, around, you know, at the worst in the high 400,000s, around 600,000 at the peak of its range at the moment, right? So Rampage is doing better with Black viewers, only down 8% when the overall audience is down 32%. So I don't know if that's meaningful. What I would guess, part of what's happening here, I would imagine, in the case of Dynamite, is that TBS is now getting a lead-in from the biggest rerun show on all of TV, The Big Bang Theory. And I don't have data. This is merely a hypothesis that The Big Bang Theory is probably serving into Dynamite a lot of, it clearly is serving into Dynamite a lot of older viewers, not dramatically changing the median age, but we do see a really high quarter hour one for Dynamite in total viewership, which is not as pronounced in the demo of 18 to 49. So I think there's a lot of older white viewers who are watching Q1 that may be influencing the viewership and the demographic makeup of Dynamite. Now, to the extent that it's down 22% with Black viewers, I don't think that would all explain, that Big Bang would explain all of that difference. But Rampage doing better with Black viewers, Dynamite not at all. Why is this a talking point? Well, because as we mentioned, there's the situation with Big Swole last time, saying that there isn't enough African-American representation. Tony Khan responding defensively to that on New Year's Eve. It's something that I brought up in the media conference call to Tony Khan, and he talked about all the changes that they're making. And they have since this time brought in Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland, excuse me, is his name now. And Jade Cargill has gotten a big push as a TBS champion.
Scorpio Sky just won the TNT title.
Exactly. Scorpio Sky just won the TNT title. But it's not yet resulting in any sort of long-term change to the increase of black viewers. And again, why does this matter? Well, if we look at, again, we go back to that breakdown by percentage, by race, W's got this over-indexing audience of black viewers by percentage, which, you know, is well above the population generally and is above the cable audience. So the cable audience is disproportionately white. Maybe there's economic factors involved in that. White people probably just tend to have more access to cable, I would guess. And that's what's accounting for this 60% of the prime time people using television are white. Whereas the universe, the population, is 61%. So 69% of the audience is white. 61% of the population is white. 14% of the cable primetime audience are black viewers. Whereas SmackDown is 25% black viewers. NXT is 24% black viewers. Raw is 23% black viewers. And it's even in the case of NXT, I think that's interesting in that it's, you could say, well, Raw and SmackDown have been around forever, but even NXT is a newer program. A quarter of its viewership are black viewers. Impact, 20% black viewers. And it makes apparent to me that just the total possible wrestling audience to capture is probably disproportionate black wrestling fans. AEW has not gotten there yet. They're, as you can see on the screen here, 13% of their audience for Dynamite are black viewers. 17% of their audience for Rampage are black viewers. Hispanic audience is more in line with WWE, closer. 14% and 12% versus 14, 15, 15% for WWE programs. We've just discussed, you know, what's happening here. Why is that the case? I'm on an upcoming episode of the NWA podcast with Nate Milton and Dr. Chris Ely, that was just recorded. So we have a conversation there that you can check out soon. I wonder if there aren't economic factors involved in this, and that AEW is sort of the full actualization of this online wrestling fan community and indie wrestling fan community that has evolved into this mainstream wrestling brand. And I think that sort of proto audience is disproportionately white, maybe for economic reasons in terms of access to the internet, in terms of access to travel. If I believe, without pulling it up, if you look at, say, the Reddit census, have we talked about the Reddit? We've talked about the Reddit census here before, right? Since you've been here?
Yes. Yeah, we have it.
The Reddit census respondents are like 90% white. So something about this online wrestling community, probably disproportionately white for some reason. So there's that.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
All right, we will move on to a new Performance Center class. With WWE NXT 2.0. And surprisingly enough, more wrestling experience than you would expect. So I can go right into it here. Kind of the breakdown of all the new recruits in the Performance Center. We have Teresa Schuessler, who debuted in NXT 2.0 as Fallon Henley, is a 24-year-old Tampa, Florida native with 5 years experience under her belt competing in the independent circuit under the name of Tesha Price. Kayla Inley has already begun to make a name for herself in NXT 2.0 and NXT Level Up. A former collegiate dancer and cheerleader, Inley was trained by former WWE superstar Tyler Breeze at his training school at Flatbacks. 6'2", 350-pound Joseph Sculthorpe was an NCAA All-Conference offensive lineman at NC State before signing with the Atlanta Falcons as an undrafted free agent. Originally from Hampstead, North Carolina, Sculthorpe was a high school state heavyweight wrestling champion. We have 18-year-old Maddie Kinsley is a 6-time champion in vault, having trained in competitive gymnastics for 11 years. She also competed on the independent wrestling scene as Nikita Knight. Calix Hampton, 22-year-old former athlete from the University of Oregon, has competed on the school's acrobatics and tumbling team, earning an NCATA individual event national champion honors, national championship honors, sorry. Mitchell Lavely has made a name for herself in the independent circuit under the moniker Mother Lover, Jake Tucker. Tucker, by the likes of WWE Hall of Famer, or trained by the likes of WWE Hall of Famer Kane, Natalya, Tyson Kidd, and Dr. Tom Pritchard. Lavalley won the 2014 WWE Show Us Your Superstar contest when he was 19, making a series of videos at WWE Performance Center before appearing on the SummerSlam pre-show panel. Bianca Carelli, the daughter of WWE superstar Santino Marella, comes to Performance Center after earning her bachelor's degree in biology from Western University. Carelli has also extensive training in MMA fighting and a focus in judo, jiu-jitsu, and boxing. She was also working as an independent wrestler as well. In Canada, that's not listed.
Oh, was
here,
she? But okay, I didn't. I was wondering if she had wrestled, and she has.
Yes.
Okay.
She was. Yeah. Cole McKinney from Charleston, West Virginia, has been owning his craft for over a year, and after foregoing wrestling officers from multiple D1 universities to pursue his passion for professional wrestling, going by the name of Cole Carter on the independents, most notably from IWC. 23-year-old David Bostian of Wilmington, North Carolina, has been a folk style wrestler for 16 years while simultaneously training as a power lifter. 6'4", Gabe Y heads to Florida from Corvallis, Oregon, following his tenure as a D1 rugby player at Lindenwood University. The 260-pound Army reservist was projected to be drafted into the Professional Rugby League. Carla Gonzalez from Pasadena, Texas, is better known as Roxy after graduating from Booker T's Reality Wrestling School, the youngest Reality Wrestling Diamonds champion. Also, she was Ring of Honor Women's Champion. They don't list it on her.
Tony Khan owns that.
Of Beltsville, Maryland, stands at 6'3" and weighs 245 pounds after playing 4 years on the defensive line at Washington State University. Edwin Grande was a standout offensive lineman from the University of Idaho and Monterey Peninsula College. The Oakland, California native has played for the Houston Blues football team during the 2020 Spring League. And lastly, Amelia Herr is an 18-year-old criminal justice major out of Westchester, Pennsylvania, with 2 years of taekwondo training under her belt. She also competed on the independents as the Notorious Mimi.
Yes.
So a mix, a lot of independent wrestling experience, some straight from the pros or college sports athletes, second generation star, at least in there. But like I said, she did wrestle a little bit up in Canada.
Mm-hmm. I'm always interested in the choice of words here. Did you know, Chris Gull, that you are a ring announcer on the independent circuit? Do you ever refer to yourself that way? You're getting in the car to go work the independent circuit?
It sounds so like 1990s video game. Like you work your way up. You start on the independent circuit, and then you like that's what it sounds like. Yeah, no, I guess it's a nice buzzword for it instead of calling it just independent wrestling promotions, since there's various different types. Believe me.
Yes, just they did alternate one time the independent wrestling scene. It's a scene. Sure. So we've got how many people are included in this? I mean, obviously, this included some people who are already on NXT, including Fallon Henley and Kayla Inlay. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Yep. 14 wrestlers. And how many of them? 1, 2, 3, 4, if we count Bianca Carelli, 5, 6, 7, 8. Eight out of 14. That's more than half. With independent wrestling experience. So not as, you know, we had kind of speculated, or maybe I had just speculated, you know, early in the NIL program being rolled out that they're not going to do any indie wrestlers anymore. I mean, clearly they are. We've got half of this class are wrestlers with wrestling experience. Now, it's nobody, I mean, These weren't recognizable names to me, well, other than Roxy, right? Is who's by far the most recognizable name on here. I think everyone would agree. Are you familiar with any other names? I mean, I guess other than you know, Santino's daughter, Bianca Carelli. Yes.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Cole Carter. I have some friends that like worked for IWC and him being down there working with a couple of his worked matches against some of my friends. So I'm familiar with Cole Carter. I'm familiar with Notorious Mimi on the Northeast. She was actually supposed to recently do an Empire State Wrestling show, but had a scheduling conflict. So familiar with her. I know the name of Tesha Price from AEW Dark. Down there quite a bit, I believe.
Yes. At least in 2 years. We don't have a match breakdown for how many matches she had in AEW Dark, but yeah. Fallon Henley, also known as Tesha Price, was on AEW Dark. Kayla Inlay, who was formerly known as Christina. Is that how you say that with the X?
I guess so. Christina K.
Christina K. Was also on Dark at least once. Cole Carter was on Dark. Roxy has not appeared for AEW, but Amelia Hare, Notorious Mimi, has. I pulled their cage match profiles to see how much experience did each of these wrestlers have before they came to WB. It's not a ton. I mean, even is this Kayla Inlay, who they say is 18 years old, right? No, Amelia Hare. So Notorious Mimi is an 18-year-old criminal justice major, is what she's referenced as. And she has been wrestling since 2019, which means that she'd been wrestling since, like, age 16, 15?
Yeah, and most of it's New Jersey, so that makes sense.
Okay.
Like, looking at the
feds. Where that's legal?
In Jersey, yeah. And I believe she's a Monster Factory graduate.
Okay.
So.
And Nikita Knight, real name Maddie Kinsley, that is this person here, 18 years old, is what she's referenced as here. Wrestling since 2015. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. She's got no matches in her cage match record after 2019, which doesn't mean she hasn't wrestled, but not in anything the cage match has caught. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago. She's been wrestling since she's 12.
I have to like pull up the cage match like specifically because so anyway. I can't really see like where those are based out of.
So there's that. So nobody with like this huge indie buzz name, but definitely people with any wrestling experience.
I would say Roxy was had a pretty big buzz, but other than that, I mean, you know, appeared in Ring of Honor, MLW, and Impact. Within the last year.
True. Yeah. And is she still... No, Deonna Purrazzo is the Ring of Honor champion.
Yeah.
Correct? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we'll move on to a bit of a similar thing here. Influencer, I think... I don't know how they're pronouncing this. Hashtag influencer app or just...
No vowels here except for the first letter. I didn't even realize this, actually, that's a conceivable pronunciation of this all caps brand. I really left this up to you. I messaged you earlier this week, Gullo, maybe yesterday for all I remember, and told you, can you learn something about this? Because I have no idea what's happening here. We do get a quote in this press release, though, from Paul Levesque, who is apparently working. He's working on not, he's provided a quote, ostensibly.
So, yeah, I will get into this press release, and I'll kind of tell you what I found. So WWE today announced a multi-year partnership with INFLCR, a TeamWorks product and industry-leading brand-building content and name, image, and likeness business manager platform for college athletes to increase the scope and scale of WWE's NIL program called Next in Line. We are excited about the opportunities that this partnership with INFLCR will create as we continue to expand our Next Line program and identify student-athletes with an interest of becoming WWE superstars. Through the partnership, WWE will leverage INFLCR's technology and alliances with more than 200 NCAA Division I colleges and universities to reach thousands of INFLCR student athletes looking to monetize their name, image, and likeness. Together, WWE and INFLCR will innovate how student athletes engage the WWE brand while maintaining their NCAA eligibility.
INFLCR influencer.
Yeah, did some research on this here. Okay. And so they started as just a social media app in the aspect of, and you could, like, colleges could post, like, or athletes could post, like, in-game photos and stuff like that, and it would hit every single one of their social media websites as far as Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever it might be. And then once they allowed name, image, and likeness in NCAA, what they did for this was now colleges sign up for it. So, like, if I'm a business, right, and there's multiple different things, there's multiple different products on this. There's one just for the colleges, one just for the athletes, one for businesses. But if I'm a business and I want athletes, let's say, to do a radio commercial, I can go by university and see every athlete eligible to do that. And the colleges are, like, encouraging the students to do this, and they're kind of streamlining and controlling the process. So what I'm assuming WWE will be is one of these businesses that can connect directly with these athletes. They could look at all these athletes. They could look at their social media presence. They could see how many Instagram followers, Twitter followers, TikTok, all that. They can see all that. They could see any accomplishments in college and all that. The athletes themselves, they can share their accomplishments. They can share their college accomplishments. It's really, it's like, it's a marketing platform for these athletes with a control in the aspect of the colleges can kind of steer them into a direction like, oh yeah, this sounds like a reputable thing as well as this app. It doesn't seem like I can't just start, my car dealership can't just join this. I have to apply to get a demo and get approved and all that.
I see. You have a car dealership? Like,
no, I'm just for example, I own a car dealership. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like, and it helps athletes get stuff like cameos.
Come on down to Chris Gullo Toyota. Oh no, Kia. You would be.
Oh no, dealer. No Toyota, Kia. But what it seems to be is that, like, you know, they can get cameos from this and other things that are approved businesses too. So it's a, like I said, it's a one-stop shop. It seems to be for athletes to monetize their name and kind of put their credentials out there. But it also, like, WWE can look at this and go, this guy's got an impressive look, but he has, you know, 200 Instagram followers.
So what should we be expecting WWE to get out of this? It, like, a recruiting database?
That's what I'm assuming, because they never clear – looking at it, I mean, colleges sign up for it and they list their athletes, but WWE wouldn't do that unless they're going to market these college athletes out to other businesses. So I would assume they're doing it to, you know, be able to connect with these athletes. I mean, because you can, there's over, like, I think 7,000 athletes listed or something like that. I had their website up. I still had it up here, and they tout all their accomplishments. But for example, if I just, like, if I wanted to just look at Southern Mississippi University, will show me every athlete listed that's with that program on this app here. And they have, like, a lot of the major D1 colleges, which seems to be what WWE's looking for. We've seen some smaller colleges, but mostly they're pulling these athletes out of, you know, top tier colleges. Mm-hmm. So just not loading for me, but it was listing a bunch of stats as far as how many athletes, how many colleges and all that.
Right.
Earlier.
Okay. Any other developmental thoughts, information you want to share?
Nothing right now. I mean, I do hear that they're expanding into this name, image, and likeness thing as far as specializing in these college athletes. Mm-hmm. So,
okay. Alrighty. Crypto investor, Chris Gallo, are you into the NFT market?
I still don't fully understand its longevity, to be honest with you. But yeah, let's talk about this. CoinDesk. Yes. The small but blossoming non-fungible television space got a bit bigger on Monday with the announcement of The Gimmicks, an animated wrestling show backed by actress Mila Kunis's Six Wall production company. The adult series, self-described as South Park meets WWE, follows a group of mashed-up wrestlers longing for former glory with characters voiced by World Wrestling Entertainment stars Luke Doc Gallows, Carl Machine Gun Anderson, and Rocky Romero, according to a press release. Mm-hmm. The non-fungible token component comes in the form of a choose-your-own-adventure mode for owners of the show's NFTs, allowing holders to vote on the direction of the show's plot at the end of each episode.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Rocky Romero's W run. I think he did a lot of good things at that time, and a lot of memorable moments and smiles that are put on faces and so forth. Did he ever wrestle? Was he ever signed to WWE? Was there like a developmental period for him or something?
Not that I know of.
I don't think so.
Enzo literally appeared everywhere but WWE. Literally every single promotion.
I know there was that period where AJ Styles and Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows went over that. I know that was reported that was being discussed. But anyway, Enzo got some work. This is probably the highest profile thing that Enzo Amore has done. I mean, outside of, I know he's done some MLW, right? And he did that yeah. Ring of Honor thing for a minute. So there's that. I mean, you go to their website and they list the reasons why you should buy the NFT. What do the NFT owners get besides just a file that is yep. marked as theirs to own? They get early access to the episodes. So this is going to be like an online series. I gather this doesn't have like a traditional TV home, but you get early access to the episodes, co-creation. You get some sort of influence over what happens in the episodes, the ability to write backstory for your character and have it added to a wiki, access to monthly writers' rooms, perks for participation in voting and story creation, ongoing voice and art contests, exclusive merchandise. And one holder will be chosen and compensated as an associate producer. So this is what you're seeing with a lot of NFT products, is trying to make it something more than just a file that you own, but it includes you into a community and you get all of these special benefits and perks. So we'll see how this goes. It crosses between South Park and WWE. Sounds ideal for $19.99. But we'll see how it goes.
All right. So we do have a super chat.
Oh.
And then I have a point that I wanted to bring up, but we'll have a super chat here. If Warner, and this is from CWJ128, thank you for super chat. If Warner Brothers Discovery decides due to new management not to renew AEW, who realistically is willing to pay $45 million a year for that product? Thank you in advance.
Well, that's a good question. So I think it's like bidding on a house, right? If you have more than one bidder for your content, which is not clear to me, even if you know, WarnerMedia/Discovery is still interested in, you know, or strongly interested in having AEW on their network in the future, is AEW, it's not clear to me whether AEW is really going to pursue other partners. And it's not clear to me that Warner Media doesn't own a stake in AEW, which may be why Ring of Honor is better to be owned by Tony Khan rather than AEW LLC. But I think even if Warner Media wasn't interested in wrestling, which I think was unlikely, but let's say it happens. I think there's still Viacom out there. There's reports that AEW was talking to Showtime before the Turner deal was made. The further we go into this timeline, the more valuable live sports and sports like rights become That's what AEW's got. And unlike in 2019, when they were trying to find a deal, they've now proven that they can, you know, Dynamite at least can rank highly in 1849. I think they would find some home, but if they don't have multiple bidders interested or their incumbent bidder interested, that would greatly decrease their ability to increase their TV rights fees. Balance that against what should they be valued as? You know, I've been speculating 3x, 4x, right? But it's more if there's multiple people interested, and it's less if there's only one bidder interested. Obviously, it's worth nothing if nobody's interested, of course. But yes.
All right. And I wanted to bring up a talking point here, because within the last 10 days, we've not had one, but two wrestling-themed virtual restaurants launched. I'll start with the first one that was announced. Pro Wrestling Tees announced, I think, back on March 10th, that they're going to launch Powerbomb Pizza, which is a delivery-owned concept that brings wrestling-themed pizza directly to your home using Uber Eats or Postmates. You can order food from our local pizzeria partners across the country. And we have officially launched in Huntington Beach, California, Las Vegas, Nevada. Each item is directly connected to a wrestling legend, and that specific wrestler or their families profit from each item sold. And that was directly from Pro Wrestling Tees. Regarding that, and we'll just talk about the other announcement here. WWE launches limited time Smackadilla's virtual restaurant in Dallas, Fort Worth. And this from press release here on the Observer has it listed. WWE and Nextbite have teamed together to launch WWE Smackadilla's, exclusively in the Dallas Fort Worth area. Food from the delivery only restaurant brand can be ordered on DoorDash, Uber Eats, and Grubhub. WWE Smackadillas are loaded with signature ingredients and unexpected flavor combos, guaranteed to smack down hunger. The menu consists of five main quesadilla options, along with sides, desserts, and drinks. And just these quesadillas are called the Spicy Superstar, the Cheesy Chicken Champion, the Onion Rumble, the Chicken vs. Ranch, and the Powerbomb Pizza, which I found hilarious.
Is this available immediately?
I believe, see,
or only since Dallas, it's only WrestleMania weekend, right?
Yes.
WrestleMania weekend. You'll be in Dallas, working the independent circuit down in Dallas, right? Are you going to, go on a mission, a WrestleNomics experience mission and test this out? And will you review the WWE Smackadilla?
Looking quickly at the menu,
sound like it didn't look like anything was vegan, so... What's that? Is there a vegan option?
It didn't look like it. I looked quickly at that menu. It did not.
Oh, well, they're excluding you.
So, but this, you know, we talk about all these things on this show, extra avenues to make money. This is interesting, and this is something that's happening. So I was talking to you off air. This is something that's already currently happening with other social media presence. Mr. Beast, who's really known on social media, he has Mr. Beast Burger. So what these things do is they rent kitchen space in restaurants in cities. And you order on DoorDash, Uber Eats, whatever, and then they have a menu. And I believe they just have an employee or two making it in that restaurant, just running that part of the kitchen space. And then, you know, delivery person gets it all that.
Why do I, as a customer, prefer that over just ordering directly from that restaurant?
I think it's just gimmicky. So I'll tell you this. So there's two current chain restaurants that have these virtual restaurants within their restaurants that they are partners with. So Chuck E. Cheese has Pasquale's Pizza, which looks like a local traditional pizzeria, but it's... it's Chuck E. Cheese. And
what's Pasquale's Pizza?
It's Chuck E. Cheese's pizza with a different name.
It's just not, it doesn't have the kitty branding that's like, I don't want to order from Chuck E. Cheese.
And I believe it's Applebee's. Applebee's are chosen. I think it's Applebee's. One of them, and they have called Neighborhood Wings, and they own their own virtual restaurant within their restaurant. So you order just, you think, oh, I'm ordering from this local wing joint. And there's been some couple. This was something that started in the pandemic.
That sounds familiar.
And here we are, Powerbomb Pizza and Smackadillas. And I mean, this could be something that I think all wrestling brands should probably, like maybe something AEW does on Memorial Day weekend in Vegas. Lots of kitchen spaces there that you could rent for your double or nothing, you know, nachos.
double or nothing, double cheese pizza. And again, this is basically just branding and product packaging.
Yes, pretty much. Like, cause like I said, the Mr. Beast burger, I mean, I believe there's cheeseburgers with like crazy ingredients, but I mean, you can't physically go to these locations. Like I can't just go order pickup. They're all delivery.
Right. Wow. Is there a WrestleNomics opportunity for us to exploit here? Can we have WrestleNomics coffee maybe? Can we get within like, does Office Max still exist or Office Depot? Maybe within the office supply stores, we can get, you know, the WrestleNomics pens and notepads, you know, or something like that.
Just rent out part of their warehouse, the backroom warehouse. Yeah. Chicken Pom Pom said it referred to as dark kitchens. Yeah. They call them like dark kitchens or ghost kitchens. Ghost kitchens is another term, like just because they're not like restaurants you could physically go to. Barstool has one. MJ is brought up. It's interesting. Like there's actually, you know, you're vegan as I am, Brandon. The other last weekend, last weekend I was like, oh, I just went on DoorDash and typed in vegan and this pizzeria joint showed up. I'm like, what is this? Like, it's called like oven baked vegan pizza. Like, what is this place? There's no physical location for it,
but it physically comes from somewhere.
Yes.
Where does it come from?
Do we know? I don't know whose kitchen they're renting.
Don't know.
You know, I mean, you could ask the DoorDash person because that's how.
Yeah,
the Pasquale
has to be delivered to you. You're not even going to pick it up. You have to get delivery. Is that correct?
Yeah, it has to be delivery on these apps. The Pasquale's Chuck E. Cheese thing was exposed because somebody wrote on Reddit that they got their pizza and they're like, "This tastes like Chuck E. Cheese," and they texted the DoorDash driver. And they said, was this Chuck E. Cheese? Like, yeah, I picked it up from there. Like,
exposed.
Alrighty. So, yeah, that's all. Yeah, but I figure this was a interesting, fun WrestleNomics topic to bring up.
Yes.
To wind this down here.
Anything else here before we sign off?
Nothing really else. I can't think of stuff coming up Mania weekend. It's been announced, like, special different things or anything like that. So,
yeah. Again, sorry for the lagging issues of the frames being dropped. I can't fix the latency and, you know, in the middle of the stream. That option is grayed out, but next time the video stream will be better. I think the audio has been fine. Hit the thumbs up, like, share, subscribe. That helps people find WrestleNomics. Thanks as always to our partners, our media distribution partners, Post Wrestling. We don't control the entire podcast market. Patreon.com/WrestleNomics. You can get the TV ratings reports. There have been quarter hours lately for AEW as usual, but I know you've been reading them voraciously. Is that a word? I know you've been reading them every day, the minute that they come out, the quarter hour reports for WWE programming, Raw, SmackDown, NXT. Those are out there last couple weeks. Maybe it'll continue on patreon.com/WrestleNomics. Live TV ratings talk every Thursday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern. And there's a great merchandise at store.postwrestling.com. Some developments in the WrestleNomics ratings prediction game may be coming soon. Look for that. And here's a picture of Chris Gullo yelling at a crowd.
Yes, and next week we will release part two. So about Wednesday, right before WrestleMania week starts, we're going to release part two of the Burt Prentice episode for Rediscovering Indy. So look for that next Wednesday. And speaking of WrestleMania weekend, if you're going to be in Dallas Fort Worth, I'm going to be announcing three shows and doing stand-up comedy on one. So, plenty of opportunities to, come see me, say hi. I'll also be at WrestleCon at various times.
Are you going to do stand-up comedy at a wrestling show?
No. So it's at a bar on Thursday night with other wrestlers that do stand-up comedy.
Oh, wow. Who else is doing stand-up comedy?
They're like Illinois-based wrestlers like Bucky Collins and Zeke. And then I believe they're adding some others. And there's some like Dallas comedians too. So,
okay. Yes. I should send you along with some WrestleNomics merchandise to sell or something.
Well, I will definitely at least be at WrestleCon for a brief period of time. My close confidant, Jonathan Ash, will be producing shows there with GoPro for at WrestleCon. So I'll be wandering the WrestleCon halls at some time. So maybe we'll get some extra media stuff there.
Yes. In the programming development department of WrestleNomics headquarters this week, we've been making some progress on metadata tagging of quarter hour labels and YouTube video titles so that we can uniquely identify the wrestlers who are named in those quarter hour descriptions, which are written by me, and the video titles, which are published by the respective YouTube channels. We're getting closer to some further developments, perhaps in talent analytics. Could be revolutionary, could be nothing. More to come. That's all. Thanks for listening and tuning in. Thanks everybody for being nice in the chat. I did have some disruptors on Thursday, or at least one disruptor. I might have to hire you to be a moderator during that time. Anyway, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again. I'll be there on Thursday, and we're here every Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern. Talk to you next time. Bye.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.